The goddess is also nature itself. And, you know, we talk about Mother Nature, right? That idea of nature somehow being sacred, somehow being our mother, has never completely dropped out of our culture, even in modern industrial times. To say that the goddess is nature means that we have an obligation to somehow be in relationship to the natural world. And that, I think, is one of the hard things for a lot of us in cities, in urban life, in industrial culture, to really get that nature is not just an abstraction. It is the real living environment that we all exist in and that we are dependent upon now just as much as we were in Neolithic times or even earlier. So when we say the goddess is nature, you know, there are many different aspects of nature that we identify as sacred. The first maybe are the elements that support life: air, fire, water, and earth. Those are the things that we need in order to live. We have to breathe. You can't go very long without a breath of air or you die. We have to have energy from the sun, fire, light, warmth, something that grows our food, that gives us the power and the ability to live and thrive and grow and move. We have to drink water. We can't survive very long without water. We have to have earth and soil and food and all that goes with it. And those make up the magic circle of life. In the reclaiming tradition and in most of the sort of Celtic-based Wiccan traditions, we've got air in the east, fire in the south, water in the west, and earth in the north. And together that makes up the circle, the four directions. The circle symbolizes wholeness. You know, when you are looking at something and saying, is it real? Is it whole? You can look and say, well, are all four elements, all four aspects present in it? And then in the center is that point of change and transformation that we might call spirit or essence or pattern. And it depends on the wholeness of the circle around it for that spirit to thrive and to flourish and to come into being. The goddesses of nature are also very much goddesses identified with particular places. And when we look at different aspects of the goddess, when we look at someone like Demeter again, we talked a bit in the first session about the myth of Demeter and Persephone, and Demeter as the goddess of agriculture was identified with Elefsis, with this area that used to be the most fertile area of Greece. Now, unfortunately, it's one of the most polluted areas of Greece, which I think is a telling and tragic comment on our times. But in some sense, you could say Demeter is the way that land spoke to people, the way that they interacted with the land. If they could give it a face, if they could give it a name, it was perceived as this goddess who had given them the barley, who had given them the techniques and the knowledge of grain growing, who gave fertility, who was seen as a great mother. Up the hill in Athens, you know, again, we talked a bit about Athena. She was the goddess of the olive tree. Well, Athens is up in the mountains, up in the hills, on dry, stony, bare land where grain doesn't grow fantastically well, but olives thrive. And so in some sense, this is the way the land spoke to people in Athens. It said, you know, don't grow grain here, grow olives. You know, olives can live on these dry, rocky hillsides and provide you with oil. It had a different personification. So one of the things that we might do in developing our connection with nature is to look around where you live and to think about, how does the land speak to you? What does she say to you? What are the characteristics of the land? How do I get more in touch with that? You know, right here in San Francisco, where we're recording this session, we'd probably have a goddess of fog rather than a goddess of sun, because that's the way the land speaks to us here. The other thing about nature is understanding that if the sacred is embodied in the natural world, then it's embodied in all that web of interconnected life and death, all the way that the aspects of nature speak and interact with each other, that the principles of how nature works, in a sense, are our sacred principles. You know, nature works through interconnectedness and relationship. Nothing in nature is separate. Nature values diversity. Diverse ecosystem is generally much more healthy than a monoculture. If you've got a forest where you've got 10 different kinds of trees growing and 15 different kinds of bushes and understory plants and edge plants and all this richness of life and animals and deer and birds and squirrels and insects and everything else that goes with that, you've got a tremendously diverse system. And if something changes, there's a pest that comes into that system, you know, it might affect one kind of tree or another kind of tree, or it might take out a certain kind of animal, but there'll be 14 other kinds of trees that can fill that gap. And so the forest itself can maintain its health and maintain its life and maintain its soil. If you cut that forest down and plant like monoculture of hybrid corn there in its place, and that corn gets a pest, it just has to hop from one corn plant to another and can take out your whole crop and leave the soil bare, because there's no diversity, and without that diversity, there's no resilience. Those are some of the principles, some of the things we can learn from actually studying nature that can also teach us something about what we can value spiritually. That, again, we're not a monotheistic tradition in the sense that we say there's only one name for the sacred and we know it, and if you don't believe in that name or in that God the way we believe in it, you're damned and doomed. We say we're polytheistic, which means that we see many different names, many different aspects, that we value that diversity, even though we may also know that underneath it all, there is a kind of underlying oneness. But our focus is on celebrating the richness and the variety and the abundance. And we don't see those things as incompatible.